So Jonathan Kuminga has been making a lot of hoopla this week with the latest news from Shams Charania and Anthony Slater over at ESPN that the Kings and Suns are among the teams that have made trade offers to go get restricted free agent Jonathan Kuminga from the Warriors. Now, Shams and Slater did also say that the Warriors don't want those offers so far. The Kings are offering only a protected first-round draft pick. They want it to be unprotected. The Suns only have second-round picks and salary filler to offer. They don't want it. And Kuminga doesn't want to stay in Golden State because he feels that this team has limited his growth as a player. So you want to go Sacramento, you want to go to Phoenix, a place that you feel like you can get more opportunity. I get it from his perspective, but at the same time, from the Warriors side of things, why do you want Kuminga back? Why do you want Kuminga back when you have an opportunity to possibly get a Devin Carter who could be like a younger version of Gary Payton for you? Even if it is a protected first-round draft pick, I get it from a negotiation standpoint. Of course, you'd rather get the first round pick unprotected if you're the Golden State Warriors. That makes sense to me. But what doesn't make sense is the fact that they would want Kuminga back. He's not a good fit on that team. He's not a great fit next to Jimmy Butler. He does not want to be there. And if you're true about wanting to contend this year with Draymond Green and Jimmy Butler surrounding Stephen Curry, Kuminga, to me, I don't think should be part of that. Now, we'll see how this all plays out. We still have Cam Thomas, restricted free agent. Still have Josh Giddey. Still have Quentin Grimes. All these restricted guys are lingering out there. And it seems like most indications are that Giddey will go back to Chicago. Grimes will go back to Philadelphia. And Cam Thomas, who really knows at this point, we'll see. And we'll see with Jonathan Kuminga as well. But it is kind of funny that Kuminga, probably the third best player of those four restricted free agents, I'd say behind Giddey for sure, and probably behind Grimes. Funny how the third best one is the one making the most noise, but I guess that's how it goes sometimes. And he is undoubtedly interesting because he's still only 22 years old, and he does feel like he has an opportunity to be a great player with opportunity. I'm doubtful. We'll see if he gets what he wants. For now, we got a podcast recorded with Adam Mades. We recorded this in Las Vegas at Summer League, but it's all still relevant now, talking about the Nuggets and their big changes this offseason, what it means for the Western Conference, the Rockets, if they're the team most equipped to take down the Thunder or not. And then we talk a little bit of state of the NBA with the new changes in the CBA and what it has all meant for interest in the NBA. That's coming up right now with Adam Mades. All right, joining me now, Adam Mades from DNVR, from All-NBA. You're everywhere, Adam. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Enjoying my summer league.
I know. It's been fun so far. Adam, I am curious about your overall thoughts. I'm sure you've talked about them a lot with the Denver Nuggets. I feel like have been one of the winners of this entire offseason so far. Valanciunas, Daron Holmes back on the floor. Get Bruce Brown back, among many other additions. What's your overall assessment of how Kroenke and this remade Nuggets front office has done so far?
Well, first of all, I think there's so many fascinating layers to the Nuggets because they get a rookie head coach, rookie front office at every position. My expectations were low. They didn't have a lot of assets. So my first impression is I was surprised. I'm shocked that they were able to do so much. And not just do so much, a lot of moves I really believe in that I think are exciting. They have depth. They brought in shooting. I mean, they were missing depth last year. They didn't have any shooters outside of Michael Porter and Jamal Murray. They've added a bunch. And then they have this very unique situation with Jonas Valanciunas, a true backup center that we haven't seen really in the Jokic era. So the Nuggets, to me, did a lot of interesting things and answered a lot of the questions that I just thought were unanswerable going into the offseason.
And I think ultimately the big move of all of them was trading Michael Porter Jr. in a 2032 first for Cam Johnson. And to me, on paper, as good as Michael Porter Jr. was in his time in Denver, Cam Johnson is just better at some of the things that is going to make it even a better fit next to Jokic, because MPJ was a flamethrower shooter and he was like a, you know, helpful rim protector, a helpful rebounder. But Cam Johnson, elite shooter off the catch, a developed shooter off the dribble as well, a guy who can attack a closeout, do some work in the mid-range area, can make the right pass, and still a very good defender in his own right as well. Do you view Cam Johnson as worth
sacrificing that 2032 first round pick for the Nuggets?
To me, no question. It's absolutely worth it because I think Cam Johnson is meaningfully better at the things that are going to really matter about the fit for Denver, namely the ability to read the floor, the ability to guard and keep your guy in front of you. Not that Cam Johnson's a shutdown defender, but I think he's going to do a good job of executing the scheme and keeping the guys in front of him. So yes, I think it was worth it. I mean, look, the Jokic era is over. I've seen 60 years of Denver Nuggets basketball where it hasn't been pretty. I think Nuggets fans are prepared for whatever's coming their way in 2032 and beyond. It's going to be ugly, but you use that asset to bolster your opportunity right now. And I just think Cam Johnson, it's rare we get a situation like this where we're going to be able to compare two players, very, very similar in different situations, swapping with each other, because you always wonder how much does you get a bump playing with Jokic? Michael Porter wants to expand his game. How efficient can he be? Those questions will be answered this year. And it's kind of exciting.
Do you see Michael Porter Jr. as a guy that can do more?
I want to. He's such a talented player. I don't know if he's as skilled as he is talented. Like, he has this natural feel for the game, you know, on how to score and how to do different things. But in the times when Denver has asked him, you know, without Jokic, Jokic is out of the rotation or out of the lineup, whenever those things happen, Michael Porter's looked really rough. And I know that's not a perfect, you know, example, because you're not changing your offense. You already have a scheme and you're adjusting on the fly. Brooklyn's going to build an identity around his skill set, but he struggles to handle the ball dynamically. He struggles to play make while also trying to score. So my hunch is he's going to struggle at this, but I'm excited to see him try.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm not sure he's going to get that chance.
Really?
I mean, the Nets drafted 4 point guards.
Yeah.
They drafted 4 point guards. Are they going to just not have the ball in the hands of their 7-foot point guard, their 6'2 speedster point guard in Traore, and they drafted 4 point guards.
Yeah.
All right. Like, I just can't foresee that they're going to say, okay, Michael Porter Jr., go to work in isolations. Like, I don't know, man. I'd be surprised.
And if it doesn't work in the first month and a half, you kind of scale back and start to adjust. That could happen as well. But here's what I'm wondering what you think about this, because Michael Porter has that huge contract, max contract, and 2 more years left, this one and 1 more. If he plays well in Brooklyn this year and does expand his game in a way that would surprise me and it sounds like maybe surprise you, how valuable would he be as a trade asset going into an expiring contract? Because if I'm Brooklyn, that's what I think they're hoping on is, hey, give this guy a little room. He's good. People are going to say, yeah, we'll take that.
I mean, for them, they already got a very high value future pick. Like you said, 2032, yeah. The Jokic era might be over.
Yeah.
That could be a lottery pick. Who really knows? It's impossible to predict. And for Brooklyn, a team that's in asset accumulation mode, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Or Michael Porter Jr. could be a player that a contender targets as their missing piece. We need a shooter.
Right.
We need a guy that can do a little bit off the dribble. We need a guy that can do this. We need a guy that can do exactly what he did in Denver or can do more than what he was able to show in Denver.
Right.
So, yeah, I think they trade Cam Johnson for MPJ in our future first. Maybe they can trade MPJ for 2 future firsts at some point.
Right.
And then that means you got 3 first round draft picks for Cam Johnson, essentially.
Even if it was just one, that you're right, it would be 2 of them. And that would be incredible for a guy that felt like you couldn't trade him just a couple years ago. But if there's one thing going for Michael Porter and like his own development, Cam Johnson really developed a lot this last year. And they're similar enough players that I wonder if the playbook is the same. Like, we know what we did with Cam. We're going to do the same thing for Michael Porter and see if he can handle it. Because Cam Johnson's off the dribble game. His just like improvisation when given the ball in isolation or turning this corner on a handoff, it really shined this last year, which is one of the things I'm so excited for him in Denver. But I do wonder if it's like, hey, we already know what that looks like. Let's get Porter to do it.
That is very possible. I think with Cam Johnson specifically, that's what makes him such an interesting pairing with Jokic. The change with Denver this year is going to be the potential for playing 2 bigs or at the least having the best backup of Jokic's career. I mean, last year at this time, I was excited for Daron Holmes. The Booth, who is no longer in Denver, drafted Holmes in the first round. I was like, oh, wow. They had a center out of Dayton who can space the floor a little bit, who has some versatility. Maybe Denver's going to want to play 2 bigs. And then we have this year that happened. OKC with Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren playing with 2 bigs or 1 big. Different lineups, having front court flexibility. Now likely having Jonas Valanciunas. Hopefully Daron Holmes stays healthy. Do you see 2 bigs as a option for Denver, or is this purely about backing up Jokic and that's it?
If you mean Valanciunas, I just don't see it. I don't know if I see Valanciunas and Jokic together playing
minutes.
Holmes, to me, is more of a power forward, like an old school power forward, because he's not that big of a guy and he's pretty mobile.
Very lean.
A lean guy, and then he shoots the three so well. I mean, that's one of the big stories for Daron Holmes this summer league so far, is everybody, you know, Coach Munson, the Nuggets assistant coach who's coaching the summer league team, said he's the best shooter on the team, and that the numbers in the gym, you know, just shooting around have been phenomenal. So if he can provide just that spacing at the backup four, then absolutely I could see them playing minutes.
With Denver, do you think they're the best threat, the greatest threat to OKC?
I think so. And I, you know, the West is just a monster. There's a lot of good teams. And I like this year, seeding might matter. If you have a long first round, it might weaken you quite a bit. But if you just set in a vacuum those two teams, I think Denver, Oklahoma City will get better because they, you know, their guys will get a little bit older. I don't know how much different they're going to get. I think Chet Holmgren off the dribbles game is one of the things that OKC is going to explore a lot more this year. I think they wanted to do that. He got hurt early on, but I think that makes him more dynamic. But Denver, to me, the Jokic problem is still there. I know he struggled a little bit in some of this series. They had two shooters, and oftentimes one of them was off the court. So you had one shooter. I mean, Oklahoma City really knew what they could do against him. I think giving a little bit more of a balanced offense, he just presents problems. And now they have the depth to not completely die whenever he's off the court.
I mean, this is the best depth Denver's had in years,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I think so. I would agree with you that they're the best threat. But ultimately, to me, the big question still with them is, what version of Jamal Murray are you actually going to get? Is Jamal Murray going to enter the year out of shape again? Is he going to be up and down, super inconsistent once again? Or are you going to get a version Jamal Murray that looks like the championship year Jamal Murray?
Right.
That's the question. There's that off-season video of him. He looks a little like me. He looked a little heavy, Adam. It looked like he's going to lose some weight.
I can't do muscle watch, man. I can't do it. But I do agree. I didn't love the photos. I didn't love the videos. But look, this is Jamal Murray's biggest thing. And it's been a growing reputation of his now over the last couple of years since the championship. And I think, it extends to before the championship. If you look at his numbers in 2018, 2019, slow starts, gets in shape later on. But it didn't really catch up to him until 2024. The title defense year, and then especially in 2025, this last year, where now it is his reputation that he does not come prepared for the season, and as a result, Nikola Jokic ends up playing a whole lot of minutes in October, November, December that catch up to him in April, May, and hopefully June. So this year, I think all eyes are going to be on Jamal Murray. I have no idea. I mean, look, I love this Nuggets team. I agree with you. It's super deep. That's versatile. It's the smartest team. Depth, whatever. It's the smartest Nuggets team I think they've ever had. Jamal Murray is the linchpin.
Has Houston, with their addition of Kevin Durant and, you know, maybe Reed Shepard gets into a role this year. We saw him score 28 in his first summer league game, dominant from three. They're young guys who get better as well. Amen Thompson, Tari East, and Jabari Smith. Alperen Sengun, still young, can get better as well. They bring back Adams. They add Clint Capella. They have vets. They have youth. Is Houston, you think, the second most likely threat to OKC in the West?
I think so. And you could even swap them with Denver. I think it's 1A and 1B. The thing about Houston, I do think they'll have a little bit of harder time to scoring. They'll rely on Kevin Durant a lot. His health as he continues to age will be a major question. But I'm curious. We kind of give the young guys this linear growth. And Amen Thompson is one of those guys that I would say, let's just wait and see. Because he might have exponential growth. I am so high on that guy. And he figures out there's guys that develop skills over time. He's going to develop skills. But then there's guys that figure the game out quickly, and you watch him figure the game out rapidly. And so I look at that and I say, man, that might be a two-headed monster out there. It's like KD and the backup singers. It might be a two-headed monster just depending on what Amen Thompson could do.
I mean, look, I think the way you're talking about Amen is the way they're hoping for Reed Sheffer.
Yeah.
I mean, they bring back Van Vliet on a new contract. I think Houston's front office is banking on Reed Sheffer being that offensive spark in the backcourt. Not behind Fred VanVleet. They need him to be ahead of Fred VanVleet at some point. Maybe not this year.
Okay.
It might be too much too soon.
I think so.
But you're talking about exponential growth.
Yeah.
Reed Sheffer got better over the course of the year. He dominated in the G League. He had some great moments in the regular season as well, including against Oklahoma City. But due to bucket glove.
Yeah.
He's a three-point assassin from deep range. He's able to get into the paint. He's able to get into the mid-range for pull-ups. He's a great playmaker. I had Reed Sheffer number one on my board, so I'm probably a little bit biased here when it comes to my perspective of what he can be. But I just think, so Houston, there's so many young guys that are on, obviously everybody's on a different trajectory. It's not always linear, as you said. But Amen Thompson and Reed Sheffer are the two guys I think that could really propel them forward when it comes to thinking about what Houston could actually be next season. More so than just like KD and Van Vliet and Şengün and all the young guys.
Right.
So I think that's sort of the way I look at it, similar to you with Amen.
I think with Reed Sheppard, here's the thing. Especially at the guard position, regular season, I think absolutely this could happen. He has a great developmental year. He contributes. They have a good regular season win-loss record. You get to the playoffs, and defensively, schematically, everything is so complicated because the game's getting more complicated. And in the playoffs, things are getting more intense. And I just have a hard time imagining that 7 months from now, 8 months from now, whenever the playoffs begin, that he would be ready for what Oklahoma City, Minnesota, these teams are defensively are going to throw at him for him to solve. So that's why I think I don't know how much of a difference he'll make in their title odds.
And what they'll try to do to him when he's on defense as well.
Right.
He is only 6'2". He's on the smaller, leaner side. So anytime you have a guy of that size, it could be a problem for your defense. It just can be, depending on the opponents.
Right.
I mean, like, I think for, you know, Indiana, they threw out, you know, Nesmith is 6'5". He's their three. And Nembhard and Haliburton in the backcourt. Neither of them are big, but they're gritty, tough,
smart
defenders. Like, Haliburton, not on ball necessarily, but off ball, he became very reliable. And so much of it depends on matchups, too. Just luck of the draw with the path you end up getting. How healthy is your team? All these things that none of us can predict at this point. The middle of July, looking ahead to the next April, May, and June. It's impossible. But one thing we have seen this July, Adam, is the CBA just forcing changes.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Boston had to blow things up. Stevens was asked at his press conference, you know, why'd you make these moves? Well, we had to make these moves because of the CBA. Otherwise, we don't. I mean, he's admitting that, obviously. Everybody knows. It's not like he's breaking news saying that. It's been interesting, Adam, for me. Like, I'm back in Massachusetts now, so I'm around all my friends. I'm talking to them more often about the Celtics and all that. The amount of, like, disappointment there's been from people just about, like, wow, like, we had this team and we had to break it up because these new rules?
Right.
Like, it's just, I feel like a lot of fans are probably down about it. You know,
it's going to take them a while to catch up too, because one, it's complicated. I mean, we work in the industry and I still have to spend time studying what's going on half the time because it's very complex. But on top of that, it does seem like what the fallout will be is teams rising and falling quicker than before.
Yes.
These 7-year arcs where it's like, okay, they're building, they're on the upswing, they're at their peak, they're trying to hold on. That might not happen as much. And fan bases don't follow it this closely. I mean, most fans are just kind of, oh, the season's here. How's our team look? And if you're rising and falling with that much volatility, so hard, you have a good roster, but you can't keep it together. I think it's good for parity, which is what Adam Silver wants. I think it's bad for continuity, and it might be confusing. I'm just really curious. Even in football, you watch teams, they have these 5-6-year arcs. I'm curious if basketball has a lot of 5-6-7-year arcs. The Nuggets right now are on year 10 basically of an arc. It's kind of nice. There's a storytelling that's involved with it. If teams constantly have to make decisions every 2 or 3 years that turn the personality, the identity of the team over, I'm just curious to see how fans accept that and what it does for the overall accessibility of the game.
You know, it's interesting because I feel like one of the things that the NFL has always had is like the teams have identities,
yeah,
brands, and you know, that can change over time as well. But with the NBA, that where random weird jerseys at home on national TV games and different courts, and you tune, if you're a casual fan who watches the NBA once every couple of weeks, you tune in, who am I watching? And then the players will be changing more frequently as well.
Right.
And so there's not an identity attached to some of these teams.
Yeah, the iconic Nuggets teams, like you can go through the eras, the 80s, it was the same team for 10 years, you know, they became iconic guys. The 90s for the Nuggets was a lot more choppy because of some injuries, and the fan base disappeared in the 90s. It's almost like the Nuggets didn't exist. 2000s, you get Carmelo Anthony and Andre Miller, Kenyon Martin. It had an identity, and I hope the NBA doesn't lose that in this new CBA where you don't have that for fans to kind of latch on to.
Now, here's just, you know, counter-argument here. In today's society,
yeah,
things are moving so fast, and there's so much content out there, and the NBA is not just competing against the NFL. They're competing against Squid Games.
Yeah.
They're competing against, like, your morning stroll on TikTok laying in bed.
Oh, no.
They're like, content is content. From the NBA's perspective, I wonder if they would say, well, change makes things more interesting. It spices things up.
I'm curious if it plays out that way. Again, with fans, with sports, I think you like the narrative, the arcs, the rise and the fall. I mean, this is storytelling in sports. Guy comes up short, but he comes back next year. Team comes together. The missing piece. the turnover, I just, it's the
hero's journey type of
thing. The hero's journey. I think the Rolling Stone not gathering any moss part of this might, I just worry that's what it is if you never have enough time to kind of catch on. I mean, Monte Morris was a beloved Nugget. He's just a role player, but he was here long enough for you to kind of get to know him. And I'm worried that those guys might be kind of in and out and in and out.
Their argument might be, well, these stories are happening. It's just happening quicker.
Yeah.
Like, it's happening over 3 years instead of 7-8 years. It's like, yeah, but it's different. Like, the passage of time does still matter. I think what Boston had, the rise with these young guys, winning early, really tough defeats, winning a championship is so fulfilling.
Right.
Like, when you go through those losses, Denver experienced that as
exact
well.
Exact same arc.
Going through it and then winning just makes it all the more special
right.
in those different types of ways. I think, like, you know, again, with Boston, 08 Celtics, different, but you felt it with Paul Pierce, specifically with one player who was there for over a decade and went through so many different trials and tribulations. And then you put a team around him, they win in year one. But with Pierce, you felt it.
Right.
And so, I mean, look.
Well, how about Indiana, too, though? Because I want to say Indiana might be the perfect example of this, where it feels like they're on the ascension, but they're not. It's over. I mean, they're going to have to retool now. Miles Turner's gone. You know, that's a little bit of a special circumstance. But to me, them and Boston are the two examples we see most closely so far.
And Turner, pretty much like, I mean, he's saying whatever he wants to say at his press conference. But he said something, I'm paraphrasing here. He's like, well, after getting a taste of being so close, I wanted to maximize my chances of winning again. And it's like, okay, well, maybe this is purely about the money.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a big part of it here. But also, maybe Milwaukee does present you a better chance rather than Halliburton post-torn Achilles going to play with, hopefully Giannis wants to be there, with a team that's going all in, even waving and stretching Damian Lillard. Maybe that team does present you a better chance from his perspective.
Yeah.
Maybe it does.
I mean, maybe. I mean, when we talk about next year and the obstacles they were facing with the health in Indiana, it is entirely possible. I don't know what to make of that Milwaukee team, by the way.
I don't know.
Because I throw it out. First of all, I just kind of go like, okay, they're not going to be good. As I go through it, I'm like, it could be. It's the East. You know, there's some talent. There's that kind of talent I love, Kevin Porter Jr.'s, Gary Trent Jr.'s. But, I mean, there is some talent, so they're interesting.
A.J. Green, you know, Larry Jackson, all these guys. Milwaukee's strange. I feel like with them, man, I talked with Bobby Marks about them and for a podcast that may have already aired by the time ours does. And Bobby and I agree. They just need more shooting, period. Yeah. They need more shooting.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's going to have to be something. They have to do what Denver did, trading their 2032 first-round draft pick in order to get more.
Yeah.
And we'll see if Giannis even stays.
And we'll see if that happens as well.
So, I mean, he was on Speed's Twitch stream, talking about Twitch, saying probably stays in Milwaukee, but no guarantees.
Probably, man. Live streaming. I don't get that. I didn't know about this guy until it happened.
You're not watching Twitch ever?
Not watching Twitch. No. Not watching...
I mean, you stream.
I do stream.
You are a streamer four times a week. You're a streamer, Adam. You're saying you know how to
stream. I only consume my own content.
You are a streamer. Do you watch your shows back?
I used to though quite a bit when I was first starting out.
Taking notes.
Yeah, taking notes. Now I'm like, come on, I don't know.
Yeah, you're a streamer, Adam.
Yeah, and there you go.
Well, thanks to Adam Mata's YouTube streamer, extraordinaire, for joining me today. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you so much, brother.
Big thank you to Adam for joining me on today's episode. We'll be back again next week with more NBA talk, and maybe we'll get some actual news as well. Have a good weekend, everybody.